Good afternoon, everyone, and welcome to today's webinar, Working with Gender Diverse Young People and Their Families. My name is Kelly Hand, and I'm Acting Deputy Director of Research here at the Australian Institute of Family Studies. I'd like to begin by acknowledging the traditional custodians on the lands on which we meet in Melbourne. The traditional custodians are the Wurundjeri people of the Kulin Nation. I pay my respects to their elders, past and present, and to the elders from other communities who may be participating today. Today's webinar will explore the information and skills needed for practitioners to work effectively with gender diverse young people and their families. Before we begin, I need to briefly mention some housekeeping details. One of the core functions of the CFCA Information Exchange is to share knowledge, so I would like to invite everyone to submit questions via the chat box at any time during the webinar. We will respond to your questions at the end of the presentation. We'd also like to continue the conversation we begin here today. To facilitate this, we've set up a form on our website where you can discuss the ideas and issues raised, submit additional questions for our presenters, and access related resources. We'll send you the link to the forum at the end of today's presentation. As you leave today's webinar, a short survey window will also open in a new window. We'd appreciate your feedback. Please remember that this webinar is being recorded and the audio transcript and slides will be made available on our website and YouTube channel in due course. It's now my pleasure to introduce today's presenters. Dr. Louise Cooper is a counselling psychologist and child and family practitioner in Drummond Street Services Queer Space team. Queer Space provides affirmative counselling services delivered by LGBTIQ and queer-friendly mental health practitioners. Louise specialises in counselling and supporting transgender and gender diverse adults and young people and their families. Louise has been actively involved in establishing several projects promoting the well-being of gender-diverse youth through Transgender Victoria and Y-Gender. She regularly supports the Q program, an LGBTIQ youth group based in the western suburbs of Melbourne. Louise uses the pronouns she and her. Ari Dunphy is an intern practitioner in Drummond Street Services Queer Space team, working with individuals and families. Ari is currently completing a Master's in Counselling and Psychotherapy at Ken Miller Institute with a research thesis on frameworks for conceptualising LGBTIQ intimate partner violence. Ari is passionate about the health and well-being of transgender people and seeks to contribute to the collective understanding of gender. Ari uses the pronouns they and them. Please join me in giving Louise and Ari a very warm virtual welcome.
Thank you, Kelly. Can hear the applause from here.
Thanks, Kelly.
I'd like to firstly acknowledge the traditional owners of the land where we meet and pay our respects to elders past and present. And I'd like to thank everyone for tuning into this. It's fantastic that there is so much interest and welcome, particularly if this is the first time that you have decided to find out a little bit more about gender diversity. And I'm really happy that Ari is here too. I'll say from the start, you may have seen the photos, but Ari is an awful lot younger than me, in their 20s, and therefore has a slightly different perspective than I do. I'm in my 50s. So this is what we're going to be doing this afternoon. It's really important that when we're talking about gender diverse young people, that we talk about the context in which they are living. So there will be a fair amount of background information here before we go into actually how you can work with these young people. And to just bring a little bit of glamour to proceedings, there's David Bowie and Tilda Swinton. So Queer Space, where Ari and myself work, is a specialist counselling service. It's a service provided by queer-identified practitioners and queer-friendly practitioners. And Queer Space is embedded within Drummond Street Services. Drummond Street Services has been around for 120 years, multidisciplinary team. And so queer space is supported by all these people working in different areas, and the whole of Drummond Street works with the whole of family model. So why are we doing this webinar? Why have you tuned in? Well, awareness about gender diversity has increased, I'd say, exponentially over the last few years. This is the front cover of Time magazine just last month, reporting on a Harris poll taken in the United States that found that 12% of millennials identify as transgender or gender non-conforming. That's an awful lot of people, and there's no reason to think that that figure wouldn't apply to in Australia as well. So before we go any further, I think it's important to establish some definitions. And Ari's going to do this. And one of the things about definitions and language is that there has been a lot of change. There is still a lot of change in this area to refine how we are talking about gender diversity. Ari.
Thanks, Lou. So the first thing that I'll say is that it's really important to get familiar with the language around gender diversity, and that, it's changing quite a lot. So to primarily, it's primarily go with the language that the client brings to you, but get familiar with the ones here and others as well. So first of all, sex and gender are different, and that's really important to get clear on. While sex refers to someone's physical characteristics, that is the basis for how a person is assigned at birth, gender identity is how someone feels, who they are, and how they like to be treated and referred to by others. It's possible also to be intersex, which means that you fall outside of the male and female binary. So where queer is used as an umbrella term to refer to the myriad of ways that sexuality can present, gender diversity similarly is used as an umbrella term to talk about the varied ways that gender can be felt and expressed. So moving on, transgender, or also called trans, is an umbrella term for people that whose gender identity falls outside of how they were assigned at birth. So this can, how they were assigned at birth when their doctor or parent accidentally conflated sex and gender, I suppose. And non-binary refers to people who whose gender identity is outside of the binary of man and woman. And there's lots of other words that can be used instead of this, such as genderqueer, agender, gender fluid, for example. So trans woman, trans man also get referred to as trans boy or trans guy and trans girl. It's important to get clear on the fact that the term used, the gender described in the terms used are the gender that the person is, feels like they are, and would like to be referred to as. And that brother boy and sister girl are used by some Aboriginal cultures as well, and that not all brother boys and sister girls will resonate with the rest of the words used here, like trans woman or non-binary, because those words have emerged out of a Western context or culture. So sexuality and is different again. Gender expression, I think I'll talk a little bit about cisgender because that seems important. So cisgender is a word that is used to describe someone whose gender identity fits within the gender that they were assigned at birth. So if you're listening to this and you think, I do feel comfortable with the gender that was assigned to me at birth, then this is the word that you can use to describe yourself. And I guess the important thing, the take home from that, is that by using the word cis or cisgender or cis woman or cis man to describe yourself, that in itself is a supportive act to the trans community, because it takes the onus off trans people to be the ones that are labelled, and I guess communicates that trans women, for example, are just as much a woman as a cisgender woman. Does that, I guess, make sense?
Yep. That's a very important point.
Great.
I'm wondering if you want to say something about sexuality.
Yeah, so sexuality and gender are totally different. We're talking today mostly about gender, but the important thing to say about sexuality, I guess, is that you can't ever assume that someone's sexuality is going to be a particular thing based on what their gender is. Just the way that that's true for cisgender people, that's true for transgender people. So there's straight and gay and lesbian and bi and queer trans people. And so that is explained a little bit more in this image, which gets used a lot in training the gendered person. I think the important thing about this is that it sort of tries to illustrate four different elements: gender identity, gender expression, sex, and sexual orientation, describing them as really separate from one another. So a person can sit at any point on these four spots, and that they don't really necessarily influence one another. And the even more important, I think, thing to say about that is that, as you can see here, underneath each element, there it says that these are five of infinite possible variations. So there isn't just one or two or three or four ways that your gender identity can be, or your sexual orientation can be, or the way that you express your gender can be. There's really a lot of diversity there.
It's also a very nice illustration to use with young people because it's a gingerbread person. And Ari, the point that you make there is that, you know, I think for a lot of people, in my experience talking to practitioners who are perhaps for the first time working with someone who is trans or gender diverse, is that there is a certain amount of fear attached to using the wrong terms, saying the wrong thing. And what you say there have just told us is ask. If you don't know, ask and listen very carefully to the language that a person is using and make notes about that language, because if you're working with several people, you need to be able to remember it so you don't have to keep asking.
Yeah.
It's a very respectful thing to do. So let's go back to Drummond Street for a moment. In 2015-16, we had 144 cases of young people either presenting because of sexuality or gender diversity, presenting with their families. There's been a 50% increase in gender presentations this year. Of course, the year isn't finished, but I do know that the number of people that presented with gender concerns and the first half of the year has been doubled in the second half of this year, and yes, we're not finished yet. And the clients are presenting to Drummond Street for counselling and support. They're not presenting for medical treatment. There are also a lot of trans and gender diverse people at Drummond Street coming there because the space is safe and is used for meetings of various organisations. And if you're wondering what the flag is on the right-hand side, this is the transgender flag. It's very useful to have that at your reception if you're working with a trans population. So just looking at some stats, this study was done by La Trobe University in conjunction with the University of New England a couple of years ago. 189 gender diverse and transgender young people between the ages of 14 and 25, and they found that 40% of these people were identifying with a gender other than man or woman. So this is the non-binary. Other terms are used, but I'm going back to an Ari described non-binary is the term that these people are likely to be using. From this study, we find that extremely high levels of abuse experienced by this young group of people. And if you look at that figure, 90% of those who had experienced physical abuse, had thought about suicide. This from the same study is showing us the impact of gender diversity on daily life. And if you think of young people that are avoiding places like toilets, change rooms, schools, medical services, it's clear that the potential for a young person's development and education and social inclusion is going to be severely affected, or can be severely affected by the response from other people, from that harassment. Even if it's not happening, these young people know that it does happen, and therefore being out there in the world can sometimes be difficult. I'd also like to say at this point that these stats are particularly negative. They paint a very grim picture, but of course when you have a certain percentage of people having difficult times, there's the other group, the people that are actually transgender diverse people that are leading extremely fulfilling and enjoyable, happy, healthy lives. Going back to the stats again, this is from the United States, an adult population, 41% attempting suicide, 57% rejected by families, and 78% experienced sexual or physical harassment at school. Now, if we can change that, if we can change the environment, if we can change the family environment, if we can change the school environment, hopefully that top figure of suicide attempts in the future will be lower. So Ari, this brings us to how we actually work. And yeah. If you'd like to tell us what we need to do, or what people listening need to do in order to be able to have a service which is helpful.
Yeah.
And welcoming, I guess,
yeah.
for young trans and gender diverse people.
Yeah. So I guess in a way this relates to that slide where we saw the kinds of places where people are having to or feeling that they need to avoid. I guess if someone is in their life feeling like they have to manage where they go, how they look, and try to plan for how they're going to be treated in the world, it's really excellent if we can provide spaces where that isn't something that they need to do. So the first way to do that is to respect and believe their gender, that it is real and valid, even if it surprises you in some way, perhaps because their gender expression is different from what you would expect. And
do you want to give an example of that, Ari?
Yeah. So if you, say, have a client who comes to you there and they tell you that they're a boy and you feel surprised because this person looks to you like someone you would assume is a girl because they're perhaps more feminine in manner or presentation and they're attracted to boys, that it's really important to check yourself at that point and go, okay, well, this person is the authority on their own gender. I'm making an assumption here, or have made an assumption here, about the gender and conflating it with gender expression or sexuality. So this is a person who is at this point in their life, at least, attracted to boys and is more feminine presenting, and that just might mean that he's a feminine gay boy who also happens to be trans, and that is just as valid and okay as if he was a cis boy, if that makes sense. And so, yeah, additionally, I would say that it's important for young people and trans people to be able to enact some kind of control over their body presentation and journey. And what that means is that there might be things that seem, say, superficial to someone who's cisgender, that for them is a symbol of resistance against a culture that expects them to be a certain way.
Yeah, and to understand that, I think that that last point about enacting control, if you think about the opposite of not having any control about how you express yourself or how you are, I think if anyone thinks about that for their own life, of having absolutely no control about how you express yourself, how you identify yourself, I think everyone would be objecting to other people making those decisions on our behalves.
I would maybe add as well that if someone comes to you and they're at the beginning of their journey as a trans person, that it's important not to, even if it's coming from a place of caring about them and wanting to protect them, it's important not to try to encourage them to do things that are going to help, perhaps help them to pass as cisgender. So it's, I guess, important not to encourage them to, unless they want to express themselves in ways that are normative.
And the term pass?
Yeah. So pass is about whether or not someone who is trans passes as a cisgender person, essentially, whether or not their transness is visible to the general population.
So you're talking about a trans boy being able to walk down the street and being seen as a cis boy.
Yeah, and that's really important for some people, for their health and safety, and for other people, maybe that isn't their goal. Maybe their transness is something that they are happy to present.
And again, we come back to no assumptions.
Yeah.
So let's look at some of the practical things that can be done in order to be able to create this cultural safety, Ari. I might start first that it's really important that, you know, the first interaction with a service is friendly and respectful. So I guess as practitioners, we tend to focus on what we do in the room with the client.
Yeah.
But the first encounter for most people is with reception, is with on the phone with intake. And it's really important that those people working in those areas are also aware of the impact that they have. I think they probably are aware generally, but in terms of trans and gender diversity, the importance of using pronouns, of the importance of not making assumptions based on someone's voice. And as someone walks into a service, to see the trans flag or the rainbow flag on reception, or to see something on the wall or pamphlets that say you are welcome here, can have a phenomenally welcoming effect for people that are not used to seeing themselves represented at all in places that they go.
Exactly, yeah.
So
if someone goes into a service and there's an intake form and there's a spot where they're able to represent themselves, they can feel like they're allowed to exist as they are, and that's important.
So it's not just male or female
on
the form. There are other boxes. The same would go for organisations' websites, that the images are inclusive.
And toilets is really important, particularly, and that there's at least one unisex or non-gendered toilet easily accessible.
And the reason being that people do not want to go into the toilet and feel they are not safe, to have people responding to them in a way that makes them feel uncomfortable because of their gender.
Yeah, I would say that's particularly true for non-binary people, but also trans men and trans women who do identify with the binary, if they don't feel comfortable in those spaces because they're going to be questioned or they're going to feel unsafe in some way.
The next piece is the correct use of pronouns. To be introduced, to be asked what pronouns you use, Today, Ari and myself were introduced with our pronouns, and this is a standard practice that we have at QueerSpace, and a practice that I think we will hopefully see more and more of. Again, so no assumption is made that someone's expression is linked to the pronouns that they use.
Mm. Yeah, I think ordinarily it's considered rude to ask someone what their gender is. Like in the cisgender world, that it would be considered rude. But for trans people, it's really crucial that it can actually be really respectful and caring to ask them in a respectful or private manner what pronouns they use.
And conversely, it can be very distressing for some people to be misgendered, yeah, to have the wrong pronouns used.
Yeah.
So assume nothing and be open to disclosure. Be open to hearing a person's story, hearing about the language that they use. And don't be surprised if you hear something that you're not expecting. It's important to talk about privacy, obviously, with any clients. Important to make sure that any questions that you ask are relevant. What would be a non-relevant question, Ari?
Well, I was reading a report that said that most trans people had the experience with therapists that the therapist wanted to really focus on their gender too much, and that they also had concerns and issues that were the same as their cisgendered peers. And so allowing them to be whole people rather than just trans people is important. So
yeah, if you're trans or gender diverse, you still have other things going on. Mm. You still have a family culture. Mm. You still have issues with friendships. You still have issues with siblings. You still have issues with learning, perhaps, at school.
You're still passionate about varied kinds of things. Still like to play ping pong, whatever it is that, you know, makes you particular.
Yeah, there are strengths that need to be celebrated, mm, for sure. Given the statistics that we've seen a little earlier, of course it's essential to check in on safety and well-being, to ask those questions that you would with any client. And then have an awareness of your own attitudes. Language, Ari. Back to the language.
Yeah, so we've sort of covered that bit, but be curious and ask what someone's pronouns are rather than assuming. And use a person's own language or help to celebrate the creativity that can come from there being a lack of representative language in current English, such as trans boy used with an I or agender, words that kind of mix up different gendered descriptive terms like broster or beautism.
Would you like to explain agender?
Agender is, I guess, a kind of non-binary identity where someone feels that they do not have a gender, which is different from, say, gender fluid, where someone might feel that they move between different genders at different times. And so when talking with a client about a previous time in their life, and this is, I feel like this is important for parents especially, it's generally considered good practice and respectful to use their current name and pronoun, even if you're talking about a time in which they weren't out yet as trans or weren't aware.
So the old name, the name that was assigned by their parents, is gone.
Yeah, it's gone. Sometimes called a dead name. So we use assigned female at birth or assigned male at birth rather than born a girl or born a boy, because it's the idea that someone's gender at their birth, time of birth, was given to them, and that they didn't choose that, and perhaps they always felt that they were the gender that they now are able to say that they are, rather than that they are changing from one to the other. And that it's really great if we can talk about the process of becoming or transitioning as something that is to be celebrated and acknowledged as really powerful and important, rather than saying things like it doesn't matter, which I guess communicates that it's an issue on some level that you're okay with.
So as a practitioner and working with parents, it's really important to help parents become familiar and comfortable with speaking respectfully about their young person. And back to attitudes. Now, our beliefs influence our attitudes. Our attitudes influence our behaviour. And our behaviour does have an impact on our clients. And this is why we've spent so long this afternoon in talking about this background stuff, because our attitudes can, if you want, make or break that therapeutic relationship.
Yeah.
This is the Riddle scale. If you have a look at this, and you might like to think about where you sit in terms of your attitudes towards gender diversity, difference in gender. Because if you're sitting up with repulsion and pity, it's probably best not to be working with clients until you've managed to move yourself through your own education, your own exposure, your own experience into the red and pink zone, where you're able to celebrate the young person, where you are able to acknowledge the difference and the benefit to society of the fact that there is difference, and you are able to nurture. And also, this is quite useful, this scale, to get an idea about where parents sit with regard to the young person, and also the young person themselves, because sometimes there can be repulsion towards self, because that is what a young person has grown up with. And in that case, be very, very difficult to self-express indeed. So this is very useful. Now let's get back to the work. And this is the scope of working with a child or young person. Working with that young person, the parents, the siblings, the couple, the parents, if the parents are in a couple relationship, if there are parents that are separated, divorced or absent, all parents need to be included in this. There may be incredibly positive influences from parents that are unexpected. Again, we come back to don't make any assumptions about this, that the absent parent may be dismissed by the young person and by the parent with whom they live, if they do live with a parent. But in fact, this parent could be a key to helping that young person self-express and work through some of the difficulties that they're having. And again, if parents are not present at all, if you're working with a child that presents without parents, it's still really important to try and give parents the opportunity to be part of this journey. The extended family is also important if they want to be part of this, that the service is willing to include them, as well as family, friends, and of course the broader community, schools, social groups, whatever that might mean to the young person. So we're talking about working with the whole of the family. And, of course, this depathologizes the child. Many times I've seen families present with a young trans or gender diverse child who is actually quite happy and doing really well at school. And the issues that they may be experiencing are actually nothing to do with their gender. There may be problems in the parent relationship. There may be financial hardship. There may be a history of abuse that's affecting this family. There can be all sorts of reasons why this family presents. And it's too easy for parents to pathologize their child because of their gender. And it can also be easy for a practitioner, I think, to become focused on the gender of the child, the young person, rather than looking at the whole picture. So it's really important to look at the whole picture and the whole family and what's happening. And often family members have to experience their own coming out, their own emergence, because as a family member, you are the person that needs to stand by the young person and also needs to advocate for them on many occasions. So this role that the whole family takes needs to be acknowledged and worked with. Often the young person doesn't want family members involved. They don't think that they're on board. They don't think that they're helpful. But I guess the job of a worker is to encourage and assist, support the family members so that they can be on board. I've seen some beautiful moments between families when the discussion between the young person and their parents suddenly takes a completely different toll, and it starts to be much more about appreciation of each other rather than a resistance to listening to the young person's journey, and the realization from the young person that they never ever think that their parent is going to be supporting them. They've kind of dismissed that as a possibility. But there are some incredible things that happen working in this field. So these are the stories that you will hear about a young child growing up. You'll hear about a child dressing in clothes and non-assigned gender, of doing things that the parent wouldn't expect them to do, given the gender they've been assigned at birth, and also of young people actually expressing their gender vocally, of saying, I am a boy, I am a girl, or of not understanding the distinction between boys and girls, of being completely puzzled by the fact that when they go to school, for instance, the boys go one side and the girls go another side of the room in order to play certain games, for instance. It can be puzzling. As puberty comes along, there are different things that the young person has to deal with. The discomfort with secondary sex characteristics appearing, and this can be often a time that the young person really becomes much more aware of their difference, and it can become distressing. There's also change, as there is with any young person, awareness of their own sexuality and awareness of how they are interacting and relating to other people. So gender dysphoria is the term that remains in the DSM-5 in relation to gender. The feeling that your gender does not match your assigned gender. And this may or may not, doesn't necessarily mean if you have gender dysphoria that this is a distressing experience. It can be highly distressing, but not necessarily so. So again, no assumptions. And how a gender diverse child or young person presents is going to differ very much dependent on their own family, social and cultural context because of the level of stigma associated with being trans or gender diverse. Hopefully this will diminish in some areas. Certainly in queer space it's not there. This is the reason why we need to work not just with the individual but also with the family and the social context. Ari, you want to say something?
I was just going to add that in terms of gender dysphoria, I think what we talked about before where someone is with their own self, whether or not they have internalized transphobia essentially, can really impact the level that gender dysphoria can be distressing or not. Not to say that it is entirely about that, but certainly if you have a level of repulsion with your own trans gender identity, then your relationship to your body will be really complicated by that.
And what we're talking about here in terms of internalized transphobia is the impact that the messages from the cultural context, from the family, from the social context has given a young person. Yeah?
Absolutely.
So these are the stages, again, a very useful thing to use to be able to understand what is going on for parents and young people as to where they are in terms of their awareness, where they are in terms of their emergence, whether they are telling people about who they are, whether they feel able to do that, whether they're exploring this, and then whether they are have reached a point of actually wanting some sort of modification to their body so that they can affirm their gender. And there's no definite order to this. This is kind of what we see, but needn't necessarily be the case. And some of these stages may be skipped in someone's emergence, but it's very useful. And on the right-hand side here, you'll see what is the task, if you want, of the practitioner at these different stages. So the kinds of things that young people present, concerns over their safety, whether it's their own safety in terms of self-harm, of not feeling safe with themselves, whether they're concerned about their safety within the family or at school. And it can be any of these things. Young people will talk about their friends, their social network, or the absence of it. And the term ally we use to describe a person that is on their side. They're on board. Not only will they be friends, they will also stick up for someone and they will advocate. And often very young people become very good allies. Younger siblings often are very good allies and are way ahead of their parents on being able to stick up and look after their sibling if that's what's required. Passing, we talked about before, young people are very concerned about whether they are actually able to be seen as the gender that they are, or whether they are stuck with their assigned gender. So, Ari, we talked about this earlier.
Yeah, I would add that for someone who is non-binary in some way, that's really complicated because it's about how you're read by society, and at this point in time it's unlikely that someone is read as non-binary by society, so yeah, passing is complicated.
What you're saying there is that most people are not going to say that you are non-binary. They are looking to see whether you are boy or girl.
Yeah, they're trying to figure it out as best they can, and they'll pick whichever one they reckon might be true.
So this can be distressing, difficult, hard to constantly, for the young person to constantly have to explain. Other concerns that young people may bring into the room. Oops, sorry, there we go. It's important to remember, as I've mentioned before, that what they bring into the room may be actually nothing to do with their gender. It may be to do with their parents' relationship, their social world, or their school, their performance at school. So working with young people, I'd like to put down this aim that what you really want when you're working with a young person, any young person really, is so to make it so that young person can get on with the business of being a young person and have good relationships, feel supported, feel safe in their family, social and educational environment. So the first thing to do as a practitioner is, as with any client, is to build a therapeutic relationship. And this can help to build the sense of self of the young person, that the person is there, is being validated, and can have a relationship with the therapist or worker. This isn't about an assessment of identity. The person isn't there to be told what their identity should or be or is. It's not about that. You're not there to come out with as a practitioner supporting someone that's trans or gender diverse, to come out with an answer. Yes, this person is definitely going to transition medically, or yes, this person is, I always thought they were a boy from the moment they walked in, or I always thought they were a girl. It's not about that at all. It's about an exploration, to allow the person to be able to explore themselves in a safe environment. It's a very different approach. Safety is important. Safety in the room, safety in the service, physical and emotional safety at home, at school, and how to navigate all of this, how to make the changes that the young person needs in order to feel safe in these places. And, of course, this is something that most of you will be doing with all of your clients. It's exactly the same. Attention to mental health. If you're avoiding going places, it's likely that you're experiencing high levels of anxiety. So attention to sleep, attention to some anxiety management techniques, attention to mood and difficulties that someone is having with mood. This is what you will see in a lot of the people that are presenting and needs to be given attention, not missed in the complexity of the presentation. And talking about allies, rather than talking about coming out, it's kind of nice if you talk about welcoming people in, to talk with a young person about who they want to be along this journey, who they feel that they can talk to, who they can bring in as supports in order to build a really strong, supportive social network of connections. And knowledge. Be open to the questions that the young person asks, because they may be looking to you once they've built a relationship with you to be able to answer some of the questions that they have about where they can find support, where they can find the things that they think would be helpful for them. And in the exploration, we mentioned this before, be affirming of this person. Don't talk about when did you become, because the person always has been. No assumptions around sexuality. And if you do get something wrong, just apologize and move on. It can be awful. Really feel bad to misgender someone. But if you apologize and move on, most trans and gender diverse people understand, as long as you're making an effort. And working with the parents, it's important to understand why, what the parent is thinking, what they're wanting from this meeting with you. They're from a different generation. They may not have much information. They may be working off stereotypical images that they have of trans people. They're probably grieving. They had expectations for their child, and they believe that those expectations are not going to be met. They might be wrong on that, but wherever they are, it's important to meet them in that grief and allow space for it, not expect them to just get over it and get on with it. It needs to be given space. They'll be feeling anxiety about the safety of their young person as they grow older. They will have read things in the newspapers. They will fear for their safety, for their future. They will be fearful about the judgment that they might receive as a parent. They may be fearful about having to actually advocate for their child, having to explain to their friends and family what is happening. And they may be anxious about making the right decisions with their child or young person. They may feel guilt. They may feel that they are responsible in some way for the difficulties that they see their young person having to face. They're looking for a reason, but this is very much coming from a place of what we call cissexism, that to be cis, to not be trans, to not be gender diverse is in some way better and normal. That is where that place is. That is where the guilt is coming from. Important to explore. They may feel angry that they are having to constantly deal with people's questions and negative attitudes towards their child. And this may be affecting the relationship if a couple parents are together, or it may be affecting how they relate to each other because they have a different attitude. Each parent has a different attitude, and that can be the same if parents are separated. They need to learn how to advocate at the school for their young person, with family, friends, in the world generally, advocate for their child. And they need to have referrals so they know where to go to find social connection and to where to find medical treatment if that is the path that the young person is going to take. Siblings often feel missed. They're missing out. They're not getting as much attention. They're having to stand up for their sibling that is trans or gender diverse. Their roles may be changing within the family. These are all the sorts of issues that siblings can face. As mentioned before, often they are the best allies. So the whole of family can be involved in choosing names, in the coming out or the inviting in process, of talking to extended family members, of accessing support. The whole family can be involved in this and need to be invited in if they're willing to be there. So there's a lot of information we've just presented. The take homes, it's difficult to pick from that, but here are the things that I think are useful to focus on. The work, the environment of the service, the importance of checking your own attitudes and self-educating, working with the whole family and the community, encouraging social networks, working with the parents, not overlooking the grief and anxiety in your eagerness to advocate for the young person, to assume nothing and to raise awareness through your work so that the environment becomes friendlier and less hostile to trans and gender diverse people. And here are some resources if you're looking for somewhere to go now to find out more. There's a little bit of reading. The Royal Children's Hospital Gender Service in Melbourne and Transcend, the website for parents and families, I would suggest are particularly good in giving you a lot more resources than we've put here. And, of course, you can contact us at Drummond Street.